All right, this is Gary Parrish again. It's the Island College Basketball Podcast again. And talking to you now on the morning of January 20th, which is a Monday morning. And I'm talking to you from lovely Wichita, Kansas. I was in Lawrence for Kansas's win over Oklahoma State on Saturday. Came to Wichita yesterday, going to go to practice with the Shockers this afternoon. Then back to Lawrence tonight for Kansas-Baylor. Meantime, my buddy Matt Norlander, he was at UConn-Louisville this weekend. And Jeff Brazello, who is usually with us on the Monday podcast, he's at the Hoop Hall Classic, like actually right now at this minute, watching high school prospects, which makes him unavailable. So he's not here today. It's just Norlander and I, which means nobody is going to be on Twitter saying, why doesn't Borzello talk enough? Because he's not here to talk at all. Have you noticed that on these Monday pods? Is it true that Jeff Borzello talks way less than you and I?
Listen, I want to clear something up. First of all, yeah, the jokes have already been written for this podcast, and you know, Borzello talked as much on this one as he does on everyone. We're not preventing him from talking. We're not stopping him from hopping in. But he's, you know what he does is he's got this. He speaks in his radio cadence because you know at this time of year we obviously do so much radio, and so he's very much got the question and then 25-second answer. He can vamp a little more. We gotta break him in. So that's the thing. We're not preventing Borzello from going on and on. It's just that's the way that he contributes to the podcast.
And I actually struggle with that when I'm a radio guest because I host a radio show, right? So I end up spending, you know, on my radio show, I'll talk for 15 minutes at a time. And some of that, like, then trickles into this podcast. I'll look up. I've been talking for 6 minutes, right? And then, so then I'm a guest on other people's show, and I know that, like, listen, I don't need to be answering for more than about a minute, right? And I'll look up. I will talk for 3.5 straight minutes off one question. And then television's the exact same thing. You know, there they want 25-second answers. And you look up, and, like, if I didn't have somebody in my ear, you'd be like, so what do you think of North Carolina? I could talk for, like, 8 minutes. You know, I don't need, the talking for 30-second or 1 minute type of thing can be difficult for me at times. But listen, we don't have a time limit on this stuff. If Borzello wanted to talk for 30 minutes, he could too. He just I don't know. He shuts up pretty quickly sometimes.
I know. But he doesn't tend to do that when we're actually in person, but he does it on the podcast.
Yeah, so no. It's weird. Either way, he's not here today. So it's just you and I. Like, listen, so I was at Allen Fieldhouse on Saturday. And I don't know that Kansas looked great, although they looked great in the first half, but they still beat a top 10 team in Oklahoma State, or at least a team that was at the time ranked in the top 10 of the AP poll in Oklahoma State. There was a time when they were 6-3. Now they're 13-4. They're perfect in the Big 12, looking very much like a national title team. What do you make of this run that Kansas is on? They just knocked out Oklahoma State. Perry Ellis was okay. Andrew Wiggins was basically not around, And yet they still, I don't want to say they won easily because it was a 2-point game, but they cruised to a victory because they were, you know, they were up 19 late in the first half.
Yeah, it was as close of a, or as comfortable as a two point victory as you could have. I was actually, because I live in Southwest Connecticut, and the drive to stores can be 2 hours depending on what I hit. So I was forced to leave when there was about 4 minutes left in that game, and my brother was texting me. But apparently, and I still have not seen the highlight, GP, but apparently Mason missed the free throw, and then he actually was it like a gutsy play that he made to strip the ball on the final shot?
You could, like, call it gutsy. I would call it dumb. Okay. Because he could have very easily fouled him. You know, like, it could have been a foul. It wasn't a foul, but you put yourself at risk for a foul, and so in theory, LeBron Nash could have been shooting free throws, or could have, you know, foul in, you know, in the, it just, it,
the shooting, yeah.
There was a lot of things that could have gone incorrectly when you play the ball the way Frank Mason played the ball. But either way, all's well that ends well, right? So he got a strip, and LeBron Nash never got a shot off, and it was an 80-78 win. But it's weird because I was talking to somebody about it yesterday, I guess. And they did not see the game, and they were like, so Kansas was up 19, and it was a 2-point game, like, where? And I said, you know, it never felt like they were going to lose. And I know that they could have lost in theory at the buzzer because LeBron Nash could have pulled up for three, and if he makes it, they win. You know, they lose. Kansas loses. But it never, you never had the sense that Oklahoma State was really going to win the game. It was just one of those where everything went so poorly down the stretch for Kansas that it created a margin that's a bit misleading and a opportunity that didn't amount to anything. But still, it didn't. It felt more like a blowout than a 2-point game.
Well, yeah, and now they're 4-0. Okay, so. They play, you're obviously going to be at that Baylor game tonight, Monday, and you would think they're going to win that because Kansas is at home and it's Baylor on the road and it's Bill Self in the Big 12. So if that happens, I mean, at that point, it's Kansas has got a 2-point lead or a 2-game lead on what we consider to be the three other best Big 12 teams. K-State has one loss, and it's got three of its next four on the road, so you got to figure K-State's going to lose at least one of those. In my opinion, with the way that Kansas was able to beat Oklahoma State, and I'm projecting they're going to win tonight, it's almost going to just suck all the drama out of this Big 12 race, because I just don't think, when you give him Bill Self's Big 12 history, it doesn't seem possible, forget likely, like possible that they're going to lose enough to not at least at absolute worst get a share of the Big 12 title. So credit to him again. And I, you know what, like, let's just spend a minute here talking Wiggins, because, you know, I guess when I was driving, my brother was texting, he's like, by the way, Wiggins only has one shot after 9:26 to go in the first half. And of course our little text thread, with our former colleague Jeff Goodman, I couldn't respond.
Yeah, for people who don't understand, we still, back when we all worked together, Norlando Borzello and Jeff Goodman and I, we had this text thread where we would communicate. It would be like, "Hey, I'm working on this," or "Hey, can one of you grab that?" And for whatever reason, Goodman has never let it go. Like he still texts as if he works with us, and so I think he's just bored out of his mind. Yeah. And so he's constantly with us on text message. And anytime Andrew Wiggins doesn't play well, it's like clockwork, man. You can just wait. Like Jeff Goodman cannot wait to tell you, to remind you that Andrew Wiggins is not Kevin Durant, right? And so oddly, he didn't text us at all when Andrew went for 17 and 19 earlier in the week at Iowa State. But on Saturday, he was texting again. And it's just, we've talked about it before. I mean, this is where we're at, right? There's always going to be somebody there to tell you that Andrew Wiggins is not living up to what it is some people thought he ought to be.
Yeah, pretty much.
And usually that person is going to be Jeff Goodman.
Usually someone had pointed out that he went for 17 and 19, and I think it might have been, I can't remember, but he was like, we're judging off one game. And really, I mean, honestly, if you don't want to say Wiggins is a top 15 player of impact, I guess I can't argue with that. You might still, GP. But overall, I mean, I don't know what to make of it, to be honest. Like, the Kansas is a fairly loaded team. Embiid is just emerging with each passing game. And so I kind of want to say right now, like, Kansas does not need Andrew Wiggins to be the by far best player in college basketball. Like, they've done what they've done with him playing like this. Like, it's pretty awesome. And I still maintain, and maybe I'll be wrong in the end, but I still maintain, like, we have not even come close to seeing the best of Wiggins in college basketball. I still feel like there's going to be a stretch here, and it might come in the conference tournament. It might just show flashes like the 17 and 19 from last week, where he's going to really step up. And when that happens, we're going to consider Kansas as good as any team in the country.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're there right now. I mean, Bill Self made this point Saturday. He said, listen, we're not going to apologize for beating a top 10 team. Because people were like, you know, the second half and you played poorly. And he said, listen, we just beat a top 10 team. And the way we did it, like, I would rather everybody play well. Like, my job's way easier. I'm paraphrasing here, but basically he was saying my job's way easier when everybody plays well. But what does it say about us when we just beat a top 10 team, and, you know, even though Phil Forte was making ridiculous shots, we still win the game. And we did it without much from Perry Ellis, and Wiggs played the worst game he's played all year. So, like, and we still didn't lose. You know, it still wasn't a problem for us. We still got out of this. You know, we don't need... Like, there are a lot of teams in the country, like, you know, if Syracuse, like, if Tyler Ennis and CJ Fair don't play well, Syracuse is probably going to lose, right?
Yep.
Or whatever. Like, you could do this to any. Well, Perry Ellis and Andrew Wiggins, who are you know, I know Embiid's getting all the attention now, and he should. He's tremendous. Those are the top two scorers on the team. Wiggins, by the way, is still the leading scorer. Poor, disappointing kid is still the leading scorer for a top 10 team for Kansas, an undefeated team in the Big 12, a top 10 team, according to anybody who's sensible at this point. You know, Andrew Wiggins is still the leading scorer. So the idea that they could get out of that game the other day without getting anything from him and getting not much from Perry Ellis, I thought was really impressive. And to Wiggins specifically, listen, he was not good on Saturday. You know, I can't sit here. You know, sometimes you can go, well, listen, he only had 11 points, but did you see the way he guarded on the perimeter? Like you could do a lot of things to try to rationalize whatever it is you're trying to rationalize. He was not good Saturday, period. New paragraph. Like he was just bad. He was non-existent. But again, he's, you know, he 5 days earlier, he was the best player on the court. You know, he was 17 points and 19 rebounds on the road against the top 10 team in Iowa State. So I talked to Zach Harper, our colleague at CBSSports.com, on his podcast last week about Wiggins, because we were doing a podcast about NBA draft prospects specifically. And I just keep going back to the idea that, you know, he clearly, Andrew, doesn't have this dominant personality. He's not the alpha dog guy. Like he's not a commanding presence within that locker room, all this stuff. And neither was Derrick Rose. I keep telling people, like, Derrick Rose was none of those things. He deferred to older guys. He deferred to other guys. He was quiet both on the court and, like, just in social settings. Like, he didn't, you know, Derrick's, you know, like a sweet guy. But when he was younger, he didn't have much to say. And I know he's changed some, but he's still kind of a quiet guy. Either way, there was this switch that flipped at some point, and when it did, he took off, and then it was game over. Now, I don't know that Andrew Wiggins has that switch. Like, I'm admitting that now. I have no idea if he does. I'm skeptical that he does, actually. But I watched another elite-level talent be, quote, kind of disappointing or sort of blend in or disappear from time to time with Derrick Rose at Memphis, and then it just became clear he was the best player in the country, late February and through the NCAA tournament. I'm not ruling that out for Wiggins at this point. And beyond all that, I just go back to, you know, it's not like he who's disappointing? Anthony Bennett in the NBA is disappointing. As the number one pick, he is awful. All right, Andrew Wiggins is still the leading scorer for Kansas, and you know, if you're disappointed by that, you can be. Because he's not Kevin Durant, and he's not LeBron James, and he's probably not one of the top five players in the country right now in terms of making an impact and all that, but he's still the leading scorer for Kansas. That's not bad, you know?
It's not bad at all, and I'm willing to admit that he is not showing as much impact right now as I thought he would, but he's still tremendously impacting the team as it is, and is a huge factor. We all knew this was going to happen. I mean, this was inevitable no matter how he played, barring putting up Durant-like numbers. This was unfortunately inevitable, and I guess because he was the number one overall recruit, and there was plenty of talk about him being the best prospect since LeBron, not comparing his skill set, but just overall his talent and his ceiling. It's why we don't hear anything about the other guys. Like, you know, Julius Randle recently did not have a solid game. Over the weekend, he only had 2 rebounds, I think it was. And we don't get on Randle nearly as much. And maybe that's because it's Calipari.
No, I think you're right. No, Wiggins is the one guy who gets judged harshly every time he has a bad 40 minutes of basketball. Like people go, ooh, Andrew Wiggins is really struggling. Okay, why do you think that? Well, he was terrible set. Yeah, but like, again, last Monday, a week ago, he was, you know, 17 and 19. Like, so even for the week, he was like, he averaged, I don't know, like, what was it? Like, you know, it would still be like a double-double for the week.
Yeah.
You know, he'd still average a double-double for the week. Like, you know, and when we go, oh, you know, Jabari Parker or Julius Randle, like, you know, is getting double-doubles every game. Well, Andrew Wiggins, who is, quote, struggling, according to people, because of what they saw on Saturday, still averaged a double-double or thereabouts last week. It's just, and this doesn't happen with the rest of the guys. Like, Jabari, you know, he's been not great recently,
right.
But it's like it doesn't seem to be a referendum on those guys. We go, oh, well, you know, Jabari's just having a little bad stretch, or Julius is just having a little bad stretch. But Wiggins doesn't get that leeway from people. I don't, and I'm, I don't, why do you think that is?
I don't know, but, and he should, because we're to a large extent, we're being reasonable with Parker and with Randall, and maybe not giving. I mean, we've given plenty of love to Tyler Ennis, Tyler the Creator. I mean, he's been ridiculous with Syracuse. I just think it's a function of the sports culture we live in now. We need to be outraged by something. Most recently, evidenced by Richard Sherman going on television and scaring a nation, arguably, or at least half the nation that wasn't cool with that. So we've got to have something that that consistently bothers us, regardless of the sport. And so Wiggins is the easy target. It's unfair, but we'll see. So I was at Louisville, UConn,
yeah,
Saturday night. Just wanted to talk about that real quick. First of all, never had seen. I didn't even know Kevin Ollie. Well, I didn't know Kevin Ollie was capable of that, I guess, in game. Kevin Ollie is a great guy to talk with. Such a mild mannered, sneakily funny, really enjoyable coach to deal with. But that said, as he was getting kicked out, I was sitting next to Eamon Brennan of ESPN.com and Andy Katz, and I said, you know, the last coach in all of college basketball I'd want to see an alley when he was ticked off is Kevin Ollie. He was rightfully extremely angry with the non-call on Wayne Blackshear when Niels Giffey was trying to shoot a three, and so he loses his mind. I didn't agree with the tech. I mean, did you think that the double T that fast was warranted? It seemed pretty quick to me.
Of course. First of all, it was quick and it was wrong as well. I think officials, if I were official, this is like, if I were an official, I would have a hard time ejecting somebody if they were, you know, even if they were insanely upset, if the reason they were insanely upset was because I messed up, you know, right. Listen, officials miss calls all the time. I think it's wrong when coaches are just constantly berating officials, just over them every single call. You really don't see that in the NBA nearly as much as you see it in college basketball. And particularly when it's stuff that's debatable, block charge calls, you know, hand check calls, stuff that, but this wasn't debatable. Like, this was a foul, like by any sort of, any interpretation of rule, it was a foul. And so I don't blame Kevin for losing his mind a little bit. It was happened right in front of him. It's so clearly a foul. It made for an awkward sequence, and the referee missed it. The officials missed it. And so I think there's a way, if you're an official, you walk over, you say, listen, all right, I missed it. I owe you one. I just would be hesitant to eject somebody, particularly in a game of that magnitude, on television like that. If the only reason this person was flipping out was because I so obviously did not do my job well in that moment. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think I'm guessing Ollie dropped a Mr. Falcon.
Sure.
If you get what I'm saying on him. So that's probably what led to it. The official that doled out both technicals is Mike Stewart, who's known to a certain, like, he's not a name that people know like Ted Valentine or Jim Burr or any of those guys, but he's a name that is kind of known for being a little too arrogant for his own good. If we're wagering right now, I'm saying Kevin Ollie doesn't get ejected for the next 5 years. Like, I think that just,
you know what? But here's something that's funny. I had, because UConn played at Memphis last week, and I host a radio show in Memphis, I had Jeff Jacobs on, the columnist from the Hartford Current, on my radio show to talk sort of about, you know, UConn basketball and Kevin Ollie and whatever. You know, it was just the day of the UConn-Memphis game. And he said, you know what, you're going to have a fun tonight, or he's talking to fans. He said the Memphis fans are going to like watching Kevin Ollie because he's he's really like crazy on the sideline. And I guess I had never noticed that. But apparently Jeff, I thought about this when you see Kevin flip out the other night. Jeff had talked about it last week. He said, listen, like, he is a maniac on the sideline. Like, I've never seen anybody like him. Like, he's all running around all the time and in defensive stances and so on and so forth. So, apparently, Kevin does have a little bit of a mild-mannered, professional, like, off the court and on the court. He's just bananas.
Yeah. I would – now, listen, Jacob sees way more UConn games in person than me. Like, he's got – Like, you know how Pastner can be like that, but really...
Pastner's crazy on the sidelines. Like,
he's not as bad as Pastner. But you know how, like, Pastner, it's more... There's positive energy behind it.
Sure.
And it's not just total agitation and I'm going to lose my mind. You know, you see what I'm saying? Right. Like, Ollie's got some of that in him. But regardless, it was a wild sequence. Afterward, Ollie did not apologize for it. He just said he lost his composure and he told his team, you know, you can't do that kind of stuff. We got a statement. Katz and I were actually outside the officials' locker room. They initially weren't going to give a statement, but then he did talk about why he ejected him. He did not talk about the specific fouls. And then the aside to this is, of course, Louisville actually gets a nice road win. UConn's not a great team, but both these teams are probably going to be in the tournament. And what's come about, I guess, over the past 5 or 6 days, GP, is that, you know, everyone's forgetting about Cincinnati, which is still undefeated in that league. But you feel like some losses are going to come for the Bearcats. So it does seem like a toss-up, which is fairly interesting that you've got the four programs you would expect, Louisville, UConn, Cincinnati, and Memphis, that are going to be in the running to win the title. So it's not a great league, but at least it's got four teams that people recognize, that people know about. And I would expect it to go down to the final week in terms of who's going to win the regular season. And within that, I think it's likely we're going to have four teams come from this league, as long as Memphis and UConn and Louisville, which still only has one really good win, as long as they don't completely plummet and just drop games they shouldn't, I think it'll be pretty interesting.
Could they get five? Like, SMU's right
SMU
there.
SMU is in there. I know. That's...
Like, here's what's interesting. Like, I was looking at this the other day. So now we have a scenario where Memphis has won at Louisville. Louisville's won at UConn. UConn's won at Memphis. Cincinnati's beaten everybody. SMU has beaten Connecticut. If you go to KenPom right now, like, there are five American Athletic Conference schools in the top 36,
yep,
and nobody is higher than seven, and four of the five are between 22 and 36. In other words, Louisville's seven, right? They're up there. But Cincinnati's 22, SMU's 25, Connecticut's 35, and Memphis is 36. So you have, at the very least, four schools that – KenPom projects is about the same, and I think your eyeballs probably tell you Louisville is about the same as those as well. Maybe slightly better, I guess. I don't know. But but like, they got four, you know, pretty evenly matched teams in this. I mean, or five, actually. Five pretty evenly matched teams in this league. And you know, I wonder if they might end up beating up on each other a little too much for their own good. But if those top five can survive or not take losses too many to the bottom, I could see them maybe getting five schools in.
I agree, and I probably should have given SMU a little more credit there. I guess the reason I didn't is because their name is SMU and it's not Louisville, sure, and they haven't proven it in recent years. I think sports fans, writers, everyone in general has a tendency to do that. If you haven't proven yourself, even though in a given year, NCAA tournament selection only, the committee only worries about what you've done this year, not what you've done for the 90 years prior, our perceptions are affected by that. SMU probably is just going to have to get a couple more wins. Their best one is against UConn, which is a good, not great win. But yes, we could be looking at a situation with five teams here. I will be interested to see how they beat up on each other and what that does to the perception of the league and how those resumes and eventually build up for the selection committee. Because SMU right now, I do believe if we built a 68-team field right now, they should be included, despite the fact that they're overall outside of UConn. They don't have a lot. I mean, they won at Wyoming. That's a road win. The committee will take that into consideration. We'll see overall. AAC is at least interesting in this random year where Louisville's in. They won't be in next year. GP, what about the fact that we haven't really gotten to this on the blog? I might end up writing on it later today, but we've got a few teams here that are seriously skidding. And I don't know if you want to attribute it to conference play. It just might be coincidence. But Ohio State's dropped three in a row. Iowa State's dropped three in a row. Wisconsin is now dropped two in a row. And Oregon has dropped four in a row. So specifically, Wisconsin, undefeated, and then they've lost two in a row since. Ohio State started undefeated. They've lost three in a row since. Iowa State has lost 3-0 after an undefeated start. And Oregon, 13-0, now 13-4. Those are the four notable programs that they're losing for different reasons. But this will certainly be affected and reflected in the forthcoming polls that get released on Monday.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised that Wisconsin's lost two straight. I'm surprised by all of that, right? I didn't think Iowa State would take three straight. I didn't think who was the other? Ohio State. Ohio State, to me, is the least surprising.
Agreed.
Because I never thought, And I had him ranked where everybody else did because, you know, at some point, you know, when you start basically preseason top 10 and then you start 15-0, just with the way people do things, you're going to end up, you know, up there. But, you know, at Michigan State, I figured they'd lose that game. Iowa, I didn't think they'd lose, but Iowa's good. Like, we know that. And so you could theoretically lose that. And then at Minnesota, you know, Richard Pitino's doing a good job. Like, you know, they're like, Minnesota's pretty good. And so I guess I wouldn't have picked three straight losses for Ohio State, but I might have predicted two. You know, I might have predicted a 1-2 record in this stretch. And so I think what we're finding out is Ohio State is settling in a little bit more to what it actually is, which I think is probably a you know, a top 20-ish type team rather than, you know, a top two type team, which is where they were ranked a few weeks ago. I mean, I just think they're missing one player. I thought that in the preseason. Yeah. It's why I didn't have them, I don't think, as high as maybe some other schools. Like, as some other polls, I don't think I had Ohio State ranked where most other people did. And it basically, when I looked at the roster, it looked like a roster that was one player short. And they're still very good defensively, but offensively, they're just not very good this year.
They're very hampered on the offensive end. I maintain that, you know, I think Duke is better than Ohio State, but those teams have the same grander problem in the bigger spectrum. Like, Ohio State, I don't think can reach a Final Four because of their lack of offense. And while I think Duke's defensive liabilities will prevent them from winning a title, I do think they can make a Final Four given the right bracket. But my point is, in the big picture,
right,
each of those teams is going to play a team that they're simply, those issues are going to be the reason why they would lose in the tournament. That'd be my forecast. Iowa State is a little vexing to me. Now, they have had two road games, and then they played at home to Kansas in that stretch. So when you step back, you kind of say, well, that's relatively reasonable. But the way that they were playing overall, I just didn't think that this would be a team this year that would endure any kind of three-game losing streak. And now it doesn't get easier for Iowa State. So this is going to be a team, I don't know how we're going to judge it or what we'll make of it going forward, because this is they're in the midst of a really tough seven-game stretch. Now, their next four, two home, two away, the road games are at Kansas and at Oklahoma State. Those are going to be really tough to win. They get K-State at home on Saturday. That's actually their next game. They get a full week of a break between this. And then on February 1st, they get Oklahoma at home. They kind of, you know, they need to kind of split that 2-2 to just keep them, like, they've got the profile. Like, I'm not worried about that, but just not let yourself really get into a tailspin here. Fred Hoiberg's got a really solid team. And the point I made, GP, is I don't buy that depth matters in the NCAA tournament, but I actually do buy that you need 8 or 9 in the conference play, because you've had a few months as you gear up toward it, and it's always such a grind that you kind of need that 8th guy and 9th guy to get you an extra win or two you wouldn't normally get. Do you disagree?
No, I don't know. I'm not big on depth,
yeah,
and especially not in the NCAA tournament. I mean, these are, you know, 40-minute basketball games. You don't need, you know, I hate it when people try to, I don't know, when folks look at a particular team and they go, this team's really good, and you go, why? And they go, well, because they got 11 good, but you don't need 11 good guys. Like, that to me, I never talk about, well, they got 12 really good players. Well, good, you know, 4 of those dudes are going to be sitting on the bench, right? So mm-hmm. I don't buy depth, and I don't even know, like, if that's the issue here. I think some of it is the Big 12 is better than we thought it would, or I don't know what people thought, but the Big 12 is good. Let's just keep it that simple. And they've got 7 teams that could theoretically be ranked right now. You know, depending on what you think of Baylor and what you think of Texas and Kansas State and Oklahoma, they've got 7 teams that are worthy. On, like, if you ranked any of the 7, I don't know that I would spend Monday's poll attack column going at you, you know? And so when you've got 70% of a league that's pretty good, and you look at an Iowa State schedule and you get Kansas at home and you take that loss, so maybe you just go, listen, that's just Kansas being better than everybody else. Nothing embarrassing about losing to Kansas no matter where it is. And then you go, okay, the other two in this stretch were at Oklahoma, you know, top 25-ish team, and at Texas, top 25-ish team. Clearly, you wouldn't want to lose 3 straight, but you can understand how that happens, you know?
Absolutely. Now, you've got Kansas, your top 25-1. You've got them 8. You've got Wichita State 9, and as you said, you're in Kansas. You're in Kansas, which, by the way, I agree with. Like, I think Kansas is a better team than Wichita State, but that's probably going to drive Wichita State fans nuts. What is you? You know, you spent time there. You're there now with the coaching staff. You know, are they rock stars? Is that team rock stars right now? Are they kind of just sometimes when you have a smaller program that gets off to a start like this, like they'll relish it and they won't be like so businesslike and, you know, one day at a time, you know, whatever. What's it like in Wichita right now?
I mean, folks are fired up. You know, we were at a restaurant last night and you know, everything's Wichita. Like everywhere you go, there's Wichita State stuff, you know, like it doesn't matter where you're at. Now, some of that's just, you know, I don't know. We didn't go to a fine dining restaurant in Wichita last night. So, you know, we were just at, you know, sports bar type place. But everything's Wichita State everywhere. And, you know, it's any time a school from one of the, I don't know, maybe off the radar conferences. And I don't mean to be dismissive of it, but, you know, the Missouri Valley's not on television every night, you know, like the Big 12 is or the Big 10 is or whatever. Any time a school from one of those leagues is excelling the way Wichita State is excelling, then folks get it's two emotions really. First they get really excited, and then they also still take everything as a slight, you know. So if you do a list of the top point guards and it doesn't include Fred VanVleet, it means that you're biased against smaller conferences or you don't pay it close enough attention. It could never just be because maybe you don't think he belongs on the list. Now, let me be clear. I'm working on a Fred VanVleet column. I think the kid's terrific, right? But I guess this is what I'm saying, is like if you underrate Duke or underrate, you know, UCLA or just don't rank them or write about them as much as somebody else thinks, you know, people people have reasons or theories for why you don't do everything you don't do in this business, but it's never really, well, you must not see Duke enough, or you must not, you know, respect, you know, schools like Duke. You never get into that. With Wichita State, you know, it can be, everything is rooted from the fan base's point of view of, listen, you just don't have any idea what's going on here. So like if I rank them ninth instead of fourth, people won't just go, well, you know, maybe he's looking at the body of work, or, you know, ninth is still pretty good. It immediately goes to, well, the reason you don't have Wichita State ranked as high as somebody else is because that person's really paying attention and you're not paying attention. And so you battle a little bit of that, but whatever, I don't care. You know, fans are just, you know, I enjoy the enthusiasm. and the truth is they should be enjoying the hell out of this because, you know, coming off a Final Four, you know, like if you're George Mason coming off a Final Four, VCU coming off a Final Four, Butler coming off a Final Four, you don't really know, like, that in theory could be as good as it ever gets, you know, for
yeah,
you.
Mason didn't make the tournament that next year.
Right, and yet they've just, it's carried over beautifully. And the truth is, I think this team's probably better than last year's Final Four team. You know, I think on paper it's probably better. I think statistically it's probably better. Now, that doesn't mean that this team will end up in the Final Four, because that's not, you know, as you know, that's not necessarily how this sport works. But it's folks are excited, and they should be. And I know we don't really spend a whole lot of time talking about undefeated seasons, but I don't know when they're going to lose. You know, it's starting to look like, okay, you know, maybe on the road somewhere. I mean, you know, probably on the road somewhere. I guess. But
I maintain they're going to lose at some point. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll that'll. Obviously, if they keep winning, I root for it just because it's an awesome story for the sport, and I kind of want in my lifetime see a team, and they're not going to do this, but I want to see a team go wire to wire. It's not going to happen with Wichita State, but I like, you know, we haven't seen this since St. Joe's, a team do it. So I'd like to see it happen 10 years removed from that. Should be interesting.
You know, it you start to wonder, like, okay, well, when are they really going to slip? Because you now have got Creighton out of the Missouri Valley, so right. The league is a little simpler.
Gottlieb said on CBS the other day, he made a good point, like, it does seem like this is the first time in a long time the Valley is genuinely down. Indiana State might be the only team that could beat them on its home floor.
Yeah.
And they just killed Indiana State.
Right, and they just killed Indiana State. Right, so, like, it's but like, and Greg Marshall's just really good at this, you know? He's just really, really good. And so, I as long as they are going to pay to keep him, and they will, like, he makes $1.7 million right now. So, like, there's only so many places he could go. And there's also, only so many places I think he would leave for. Like, I think the other thing that's interesting is when you have this kind of success at a school in a league like this, the fear among the fans is always like, okay, but like, when's he going to leave, right? Like, you know, when VCU fans still on some level are wondering, okay, so when's Shaka going to go? And Butler fans, I think, were always still sort of, you know, one, okay, so how long are we going to be able to keep Brad Stevens? And I guess that's always on the table, but like, there's only a handful of places that I think Greg Marshall would leave Wichita State for. And I don't even know if those are places that would try to hire him. I think he might have done UCLA if they would have waited on him last year. They just didn't wait. You know, they weren't going to wait through the Final Four. But I guess what I would tell Wichita State fans is, like, I wouldn't spend a whole lot of time worrying about, you know, when is he going to leave? Because I'm not certain he's going to. Like, if the right job opened, like, but it would have to be a premier job. I bet you there's only four or five schools that he would leave Wichita State, you know, for. And so I guess what I'm saying is, the world's changed so much. Used to, like, if you worked at Wichita State, you left, you know, for a job because, like, you took the money. Like, Mark Turgeon left for Texas A&M. I don't think the Wichita State coach right now necessarily leaves for Texas A&M.
And it's so true, and it's kind of crazy to think about. But this is, GP, to me, this is just indicative of how and people like to toss shade at the fact that, you know, these coaches get paid so much money. But the reality is, like, when athletic programs can do well, it really stimulates a school, a local economy. And so, yeah, athletic directors and presidents and boosters and, you know, whoever else are willing to simply fork over a lot of money in order to keep their programs relevant by keeping their coaches around. And I think that's as much of a factor as it is coaches saying, listen, like, it's not always greener on the other side. Just because for 40 years climbing the ladder was really the only way you could do it, now things have caught up. You know, the ability for a program to be nationally relevant, it's more localized in a way that we had not seen until basically the past. Basically, I guess, you know, Stevens and Shaka probably, and Stevens first in making that Final Four first, they probably broke that mold and showed that you don't always have to look for the next best thing.
No, I think it's like, yeah, coaches will now tell you, you know, you don't mess with happiness, but they're all getting rich where they're at.
Yeah, exactly.
If that wasn't a factor,
then of course.
There wasn't like this epiphany where coaches suddenly realized it might not be best to chase bigger things.
Of course.
The bigger things have come to them where they're at. And, you know, more programs are chartering than ever. More coaches are millionaires than ever before. So once upon a time, and I'm talking about, you know, even a decade ago, if you were a successful coach at Wichita State, you basically were on your way out because somebody, Big 12 school, Big 10 school, whatever, was going to come at you, and then you just couldn't turn down the money. Somebody offers you 1.5 and you're making, you know, 400. I think that's what Turgeon made at Wichita State, like 400,000. Right? So when Texas A&M calls, well, then it's done. You got to go. Like, it's just because it changes your family's situation. Like, you and you can't, like, why did Mark Fox leave Nevada for Georgia? A lot of it was rooted in money. You know, it's just like you can't turn down the money. Well, now I don't know about Nevada specifically, but now you get places like VCU paying real money. You know, Butler's paying, you know, real money. And Wichita State paying crazy money. So it makes the hiring process for other schools that much more difficult because if you're a Big 12 school, Big 10 school, you can't just go buy somebody's coach anymore. Like, that rarely happens. It's why every initial list for a job is just bananas every single time because they always got to – it never – the top three guys should just be, you know, eliminated right from your thought process at the very beginning because it's always like, well, he's at this school. Wouldn't he rather coach at this school? Well, he's getting rich at that other school, and he's comfortable there, and his family likes it. You know, why leave? So I don't think, you know, I do think Greg Marshall loves Wichita, and I think he loves the fan support, and I think he loves the school. But if he was making $400,000, he'd be gone. But we've created this market where even the coach at Wichita can make, you know, is a multimillionaire. And it's going to – I think it gives the VCUs and the Wichita States – a better shot than ever of keeping their star coaches.
All right, so I wanted to set you up totally here. You wrote about the Big Ten being a basketball league. So, if that's on the site, do read it. It's one of those things where, this gradually happens. But over the past 5 years, I mean, the Big Ten has become, obviously Big Ten fans love football, will forever love football more than college basketball. But the fact of the matter is the Big Ten just isn't that good in football, and it's just so solid in hoops. And you pointed that out last week, and I wanted to have you talk about that a little bit, GP, because then we can go into the fact that, Iowa, Michigan State, and just the Big Ten in general, Indiana's down. But, I wanted to toss a softball in there to have you.
Yeah, I guess this is something that, everybody knows, but you never really go and look at all the data, and it's not even close. Like, when you start, whether it's top 10 AP polls finishes or coaches poll finishes or Sagarin ratings, like almost any sort of measuring device you use, the basketball side of the Big Ten is so much better on a national level and successful on a national level than the football side. And so, honestly, like one of our bosses had mentioned it, and I said, okay, I'll take a look at it. When I took a look at it, I don't guess I was surprised by what I found, but I was surprised that I would, I guess I was maybe not surprised, but I was pleased to find out that I would have enough undeniable data to make the point. The only sort of, blemish in all of this is that they don't win championships. They haven't won a championship since Michigan State in 2000. Why do you is that just a sort of a random?
I think yeah.
Yeah.
I think it is random because the NCAA tournament is a beast, and it is a, it's in a lot of ways, and I don't look to approach it like this. I don't try and write about this, but there is a certain purview that it's just a statistical generator. Like, it's tough to win the tournament, and it just happens that it's been a while since the Big Ten won one. It doesn't mean the Big Ten isn't one of the best leagues because it hasn't had the team that's been able to win six games when there can only be one of those teams. So I think that's maybe part of it a little bit. But overall, just take the league for what it is, man, and let's accept the fact that it's so solid and it continues to be solid. It's most specifically Iowa. To me, Iowa can make the Final Four. And again, like what we talked with SMU earlier, they haven't been that good, so you don't really see it. Well, Iowa hasn't been relevant in a long time, so we have a hard time interpreting how this team could possibly. No, they're extremely good. They're one of the fastest teams in the country. They're one of the most high-scoring teams in the country. Because they don't have a clear star and because they have not been good in recent years, it's hard for people to embrace Iowa and look at them as a team that should be rated, at worst in the top 12 at worst, and you've got them 11. To me, they're I see the teams you've got. Yeah, I mean, I honestly I think they're better than San Diego State, even though I don't have an issue with you putting San Diego State ahead of them, but they've been so good, man. And
San Diego State's just one of those where if you said we're going to start a tournament tomorrow, I wouldn't take San Diego State as one of my five most likely teams to win the tournament.
Yeah.
It's just at some point, the body of work.
Oh, yeah,
what am I going to do? Right. Yeah, no.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's also, by the way, because to the extent that I'm getting beat up about anything on the top 25 and one, it's Iowa State still in the top 10. But I know that they've lost three straight. And if you wanted to put a lot of emphasis on that, you're perfectly if somebody had Iowa State ranked 17th, I wouldn't use the poll attacks on that. But their body of work is still pretty, when you look at it, it's still top. They still have a top 10 body of work, I guess. I think Iowa State does.
Yes, the body. And now we get to that point where it's what if you proven versus or combined with what we think you are.
Sure.
So it's the progression of polls and in your rankings and our perceptions, they kind of grow as the season goes along. And I did want to give Michigan love because you know what? They're 5-0 in the Big Ten. No one had this. Three of those games are on the road. Okay, one of those was at Wisconsin, the most recent one Saturday. And so, yeah, let's just stand up and take notice and give the Wolverines a lot of credit. I did not think they would be capable of this. They have no Mitch McGarry. It's them and Michigan State at the top of the Big Ten, the only two undefeated teams left, and then Iowa's right behind them, and then everyone else has got two losses or more. To me, that's pretty remarkable because, honestly, I thought this would be like a first four team without McGarry. I just was lower on them than most, and I can totally admit that I was wrong. I still think some losses are coming. They play Iowa Wednesday, though. So that's, as we look forward, that's a home game for Michigan. And if they win that one, then I really think we're going to hear people talking about them, because that sets up a game at Michigan State on Saturday, and obviously two undefeated Big Ten teams there.
Yeah, and it's helping Arizona's resume. I don't know that Arizona needs help with its resume, but the idea, like the last time Michigan lost was at home to that undefeated Arizona team. And it's funny, like, look, and John Beilein's just, you know, he's obviously gifted basketball coach, but he lost his National Player of the Year point guard. And the other guy who was, at least in the NCAA tournament, Michigan's most important player, which was Mitch McGarry, right? You know, and yet they're still – so the team you watch run to the national title game, the two most important pieces to that run are no longer on the – you know, are no longer playing at Michigan, because, you know, Burke's in the NBA and McGarry's hurt. And yet, you know, yeah, 5-0 in the Big Ten, you know, now ranked in the – top 25 and one again. I imagine they'll be in the AP poll when it's released a little later on today. So, yeah, I didn't expect this either. I thought they could still be good, but I didn't think, you know, they'd be on this kind of winning streak, 5-0 in the Big Ten, coming off a win at Wisconsin. I didn't predict that stuff.
And you contrast that with Indiana, and I'm going to sit down and do the research today, and I think I'm going to get this up later this afternoon. I'm going to look, since the tournament expanded, just because I'm curious about this random crap, and I like to write on it, but how many one seeds have gone on to not make the tournament the next year? I don't know how common it is. I know UConn's done it a couple of times, but Indiana, you know, they lost a lot as well, but Michigan has lost a lot. You've seen what Michigan's been able to do. Indiana's 12-6, dropped a home game, 47 points against Northwestern. They got at Michigan State on Tuesday. They've got opportunities, but they're just not showing. And it's, you know, it's not an indictment on Crean. You know, the teams have dips, and it's hard when you lose the amount of talent they have. But in my opinion, there has been no greater disparity and change in terms of a team on offense from last year to this year than Indiana, which was, I'm looking right now, they were the top team in offensive efficiency on KenPom last year, and they're 159 this year. There's just, they don't have, they look, and I watched most of the game on Saturday. It just looks completely different. It looks like, even though we've got guys back this year, looks like 12 new guys compared to what Crean had last year.
It's tough when you lose two top five draft picks, huh?
Hey, exactly. So maybe, you know, Crean and Calipari, maybe they have exchanged a few phone calls here and kind of gone over.
And, but you know what it does, and we can wrap this right back around to where we were at the beginning of this podcast. When you see Kentucky dip like Kentucky dipped last year, or Indiana dip the way Indiana's dipping now, you sort of look at it and you go, well, hey, listen, with Kentucky, they were all new guys. And with Indiana, you go, well, listen, they, you know, they lost two top five picks. And so this kind of stuff happens. And I know that doesn't make it any easier for Indiana fans or Kentucky fans, but you can kind of objectively and intelligently explain it away. And yet this, because this does happen, never happens to Kansas. Kansas got all new dudes too, you know?
It's nuts.
Yeah, it is
absolutely
nuts.
Absolutely bonkers.
You know, like, you know, watching that the other day, like, you, and it's funny, like, you talk to Bill, and in the preseason, he's always sort of like, you know, we got question marks here, we got question marks there, I don't know about this, and then every, like, he never dips. Like, they are going to, barring a surprise, win, I guess it'll be a 10th straight, you know, Big 12 title. And so, when I look around the country and watch Indiana struggle, or at least be uneven, and Kentucky, you know, who's, we still aren't real sure exactly what this Kentucky team's going to be. The idea that, once again, the most reliable thing is Kansas with Bill Self. And it doesn't matter whether Ben McLemore's the star, or Sharon Collins is the star, or the Morris twins are the stars, or you know, now Joel Embiid's the star. Like, there's always stars, and they're always good. And it's just, I hope Kansas fans recognize, and I think they do, how good they got it, because they do not have to go through some of the ups and downs that practically every other high-profile program has to go through, including the Indianas of the world and the Kentuckys of the world, who are also coached by, you know, stars of the game.
Is Baylor going to keep it within 10?
I don't know.
Lost three of the past four, looked, and they should have beaten Oklahoma. Actually, they shouldn't have, the way they looked. I mean, they lost by 10 at Texas Tech. Previous road game at Iowa State, lost by 15. I think you're getting a decimation personally.
Yeah, it depends. You know, you never know. Like, that place was jacked on Saturday, right? I don't know how well it came through on television, but it was just the energy in there.
Terrific, yeah.
Yeah, it was off the charts, right? So you never know. okay, like two nights later, can you get back up? You know, the same way. Like Embiid has been, was terrific. You know, is he going to be ready to go again tonight? You know, or is there going to be a little bit of a hangover from that big weekend? Yeah. So you never know, like maybe Kansas just doesn't come out and play. They maybe they just don't play tonight, but even here's the thing. They play well, they'll win by 20. They play poorly, they'll win by 7. I can't imagine them losing in this building to a Baylor team that, that is obviously struggling right now. Speaking of, I got to get back to Lawrence, Kansas at some point tonight, which means I got to get to Wichita State over on campus. So let's wrap this thing up. And thank you for being here and filling in all of the words that Jeff Forzella would have filled in if he were not preoccupied today. Remember, you can find Matt Norlander on Twitter at Matt Norlander. And you can subscribe to the Eye on College Basketball podcast over at iTunes. It's free. It's the best way to make sure you get the podcast as quickly as possible. So make sure you do that. And then I'll be back talking to you a little later on this week. Take care.